In this week's Sedra, there is something that doesn't appear anywhere else in the Torah. There are two sentences set off by what appears to be brackets. They're backwards nuns, but they mamash look like brackets. And the Gemara has a few reasons why these two psukim are set off like that. One reason is that these two psukim don't belong here. They belong 50 paragraphs earlier. We'll see in one second what the psukim are. They belong 50 paragraphs earlier. They were put here by the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Nobody changed it. The Rabbanu Shel Olam put them here. In order, lahafsik bein puranios to puranios. There were three sins that were done one after the other in this Sedra. And in order to separate between them, these two sentences were put to separate. We'll see in one second what that means, why they had to be separated. That's one idea. Another idea, the Gemara says, is that these two sentences are a full book of the Torah. And there are not five books in the Torah, but seven. Seven books of the Torah, and it's based on a verse that says, Chatzva Amudeha Shiva, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam hewed out the pillars of the world on seven pillars, and those are the seven books of the Torah. The seven books, therefore, are Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, until these two sentences. That's number four. Number five is these two sentences. Number six is from these two sentences till the end of Bamidbar. And Devarim is number seven. And these two sentences are an entire book in the Torah. And we learn halachas from that. That if you have a Sefer Torah that just most of it was erased or whatever or ruined, and there are still 85 letters, the amount of letters in these two sentences, then you save it from a fire. Because these two sentences already have the importance of a whole book. So, in any case, now we have to understand what that means. First of all, why was it necessary to separate between these three sins? So, what's usually said is that three in a row makes a pattern, as a chazakah. So we want to break up the chazakah. Okay, but that doesn't make sense then, because then the separation should have been between two and three. That there shouldn't be three in a row. Why is it between one and two? Secondly, there is an opinion in the Gemara that a chazakah happens after two times. That two times creates a pattern. But then it doesn't help to split it up, because even though you split the first two from each other, the second and third are together. So there's still a pattern. So that can't be the reason why these sentences had to separate. There must be another reason. And secondly, why is the separation, why are these two sentences the separation? Why do we take these two sentences from 50 paragraphs where they should have been before, and these sentences have to be the separation? And also, why is the simen that of the separation the backwards nuns? Why dafka backwards nuns? Okay, so one simple idea is, according to the idea that these sentences should have been 50, paragraphs before, the nun in gematria is 50. So it hints to the fact that this is 50 sentences, 50 paragraphs out of its place. Okay, but I have another way of understanding this, and tell you what I think. I have about two or three other ways of understanding it, but for this year, this is what I want to tell you. What were the three sins? The first sin was Vayisu Mehar Hashem. Right? It says that they left Har Sinai Ketinik HaBoreach MiBeis HaSefer. Like a child runs away from school at the end of the day. And seemingly what it means is that they were at Har Sinai almost a year. They got the Torah, a lot of mitzvahs there. And the people said, enough already. You know, who knows, we'll stay here longer, we'll get more mitzvahs, right? Enough. So they ran away when they had the mitzvah to leave Har Sinai. They ran away like children saying, wow, Baruch Hashem, no more teachers, no more books, you know, what's it called? But that can't be. These are the people who adored Deya, the people that Rabbanu Shem gave the Torah just before. He's now putting his shechina with them with the Mishkan. Right? They weren't like children. So the Orat Sofum, the altar from Slabodka, says what it means is the following. On their level, it means the following. It says when they were at Yamsuf, after the Egyptians drowned, So all the gold, silver, jewelry that they brought with them was washed up on the shore, and it was just there for the taking. And Jews were mamash just gathering, not seashells, but gold and silver on the shore. Every second, another bracelet, another earrings, whatever. Moshe Rabbeinu came to them and said, God said we have to break camp and leave here. So the people said, you know, maybe it's another 10 minutes. Maybe, you know, because every few minutes over here is another few thousand dollars. So maybe we could stay another few minutes. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, I'm sorry. The Rabbeinu Shem said, we have to leave now. He said, well, maybe just another minute or two. No, now. And he had to force them. It says, Vayasa Moshe. He had to force them to leave Yamsuf. Because they were wanted to stay there. The same thing should have happened at Har Sinai. When the time came to leave Har Sinai, the people should have begged Moshe Rabbeinu, maybe we could stay another 20 minutes, maybe God will give us another mitzvah, right? And it should have happened the same thing, that Moshe should have had to force them to leave Har Sinai, but he didn't. They left willingly. On their level, right, that's called like running a child running away from school. They didn't have to be forced to leave, right? Then it's as if they're running away from school. Okay, that's what it says. Now, L'chora, it doesn't say they were running away from the Torah and the mitzvahs. I want to explain that's not what they were running away from, and that's not the problem. They knew that they would get more mitzvahs in the Midbar too. So what was going to help, right? God spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu in the Mishkan, right? So they're going to get more mitzvahs. There's going to be more mitzvahs. Running away from Har Sinai isn't going to solve that problem, if that's what their concern was. But the idea is, Ketinek HaBoreach MiBeis HaSefer. A child may love to learn, but he doesn't want to be in school. He doesn't appreciate the Makom Torah that he's in, right? Being in school, even if you learn outside under a tree, it's not the same thing as learning in a Makom Torah Kavua, in a set, place of learning, right? You could all learn something, but being in this environment of a Makom Torah Kavua is something special. And people don't like that. They like to be, you know, more casual. They don't like the four walls and the makom kavua, but it's very important to have a makom kavua of Torah. Okay, and even though they had Torah and they had God's presence when they traveled to the Midbar, but that wasn't kavua, it wasn't set. It was more transient. It doesn't have the same effect. It's a transient thing, right? It's like, you know, the difference between a house and a hotel room. You could have every amenity that you need in a hotel room, but you're not home. It's not the same thing as being kavua, as being settled, as being set. We find this difference between the Mishkan and the Mikdash. The Mishkan was a temporary, transient thing, and therefore David HaMelech, even though there was a Mishkan and there was an Aron and God's presence was there, he still wanted to build a base on Mikdash because that's more set. It's more kavua, right? It's not transient. It's settled. The Mishkan and the Mikdash is called Menucha V'Nachla. This is where God's presence rests on an ongoing basis, not in a transient way. And that has a tremendously greater effect. The same thing we find with the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin, when they were in their place where they're supposed to be, Kavua, they had a much more intense authority. When they were traveling, when they were in a different place, transient, it was called Golus. They went into Golus. And they didn't have the same intensity of authority that the Sanhedrin has for various laws. So we see that being in a place set, kavua, right, settled, a makom Torah like that is superior to even a makom Torah, but it's not settled, it's transient. But people would rather be transient and not under the shackles of having to be in the four walls of a kavua makom Torah. And that's what the Mile of Har Sinai, what they ran away from, was not the Torah. It doesn't say ketine kaboreach mi hasefer, but mi beis hasefer. It's just like we find two things by Har Sinai. One is that God descended on the mountain and created a makom Torah. Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. And even though God's presence went away from the top of the mountain, it remained by the Mishkan, and Kavua set in that place of Har Sinai. And the second thing was we got the Torah. But the giving of the Torah was given with the Shem Elokim. Vayidaber Elokim es kol advarim ha'ela. The God's presence devolving on the mountain was Hashem. And that's what it says over here, Vayisu mehar Hashem. The problem was not that they went away from Har HaElokim, the mountain where the Torah was given. Because Torah, they knew they're going to get even going through the Midbar. But it was Har Hashem. They weren't going to have that Mokum Kavua, that set place where God's presence was set, that they didn't have. Okay, and that's why the Har Sinai at the time that they were there and the Shekhinah was there was more like the Beis HaMikdash than like the Mishkan that was constantly moving around. Okay, now, therefore, there's something else very interesting over here. And that is, what was the second problem? Okay? The second thing that they complained about, the second sin. The second sin was misonanim. According to some, they complained that they were traveling too fast to Eretz Yisrael. Their feet hurt. They were tired. God gave them to run fast to Eretz Yisrael, 3 days' journey in one day. And they complained about it. Okay. They complained about it. Now, think about it. If they left Har Sinai, right, and we get this idea that they wanted to leave this Makom Torah Kavua, they were happy, right? They weren't at least having to be forced to leave a Makom. They didn't appreciate what it means to have a Makom Torah Kavua. Okay. But we could say, no, that's not the reason they left Har Sinai. They were running to Eretz Yisrael so they would set up residence in another Makom Torah Kavua, Eretz Yisrael, which is exactly like the Kedusha of the whole land that becomes like Har Sinai. God's presence fills the land, and it says that that's what Shemitah and Yovel represent. The Abarbanel says it, the Kliyokar says it. Once every 7 years, we give the land the holiness of Har Sinai. And the whole idea of Shemitah is to reproduce the atmosphere of Har Sinai, that you realize that that's what Eretz Yisrael is. So we could say they didn't do anything wrong. They weren't running away from Har Sinai. They were running towards Eretz Yisrael. And they weren't running away from a Makom Torah Kavua. They were running towards another more significant Makom Torah Kavua of Eretz Yisrael, where they're going to set up their residence for all time. But how do we know that wasn't the case? Because they complained about where they're running to. So if their whole purpose was to run towards Eretz Yisrael, what were they complaining about? Right? The faster we get there, the better it is. So it must be, because they complained, that it wasn't so much that they were running to Eretz Yisrael, but they were running away from Har Sinai. So therefore, you need something to separate between those two sins. Because if you don't separate between those two sins, it's much more serious. What they ran away from Har Sinai was much more serious, because if you put it in conjunction with the next sin, right, it shows that they weren't running towards Eretz Yisrael, they were running away from Har Sinai. But if you separate between those two sins, the sin becomes less, because maybe they weren't running away from Har Sinai, they just wanted to run towards Eretz Yisrael. The two things together are very condemning. So therefore there had to be something in between. Why these two sentences? These two sentences, according to the Chizkuni, are Tfilas HaDerech. Vayihi bin Soah Ha'aron Vayomer Moshe Kumo Hashem V'yafutzo Eivecha. Right, God, get up, God, and scatter your enemies. What we say when we take out the Torah. And then the next sentence was Uvenucho Yomar, when the Aron came to rest and the cloud came to rest and they had a camp. Moshe said Shuva Hashem Rivavos of Israel. Right, return and rest on the multitudes of the Jewish people. 20,000, minimum. Okay. So he says, this is Tefillah Saderech. Why do you make a special tefillah when you travel? Because being settled in one place is safe. And when you're traveling, no matter where you're traveling, right, it's always dangerous. It's always less safe than when you're settled. So that's why these two sentences represent the importance of a Makom Kavua, a set place of Torah is much more safe and much more secure than when you're traveling around, even if you have Torah with you and you're learning, but you're not settled, right? Something already that's you're vulnerable. You need Tefillah Saderech. Okay, that's the idea. So and even though when they traveled, the 42 travelings, they had God's presence, they had the Mishkan, right? But it wasn't, again, it wasn't kavua, it wasn't set, it was like Golos, you can be settled temporarily in a place, and you can have Torah there. But it's not really the Makom Torah Kavua. Eretz Yisrael is the Makom Kavua of the Erev of Klal Yisrael. And Har Sinai was like that for the time that they were there, and from there they were supposed to go directly to Eretz Yisrael, but everything got changed because of the sins that they had. And it could be, therefore, the nuns, the backward nuns, represent the fact that they turned around and distorted the Nasa V'Nishma. When they came to Har Sinai, before they got the Torah, they were so imbued with the Makom Torah, with the atmosphere, the environment of Har Sinai, that before they got the Torah, they said, Nasa V'Nishma. We'll do whatever you say, Rabbanu Shalom. That came not from the Torah. They didn't have the Torah yet. That was a preface to the Torah, and that came from the influence of Har Sinai. So that influence, which they appreciated, this Makom Torah Kavu, and they said Nasa V'Nishma, now came turned around and distorted because they were running away from Har Sinai. Didn't appreciate the influence that Makom Torah Kavua had on them. Okay, now we're going to connect this to another part of the Sedra. So I think that's the idea, and it could be that is the whole concept of a book by itself. Now there's 7 books in the Torah. 6 of them are nice, long, big books, right, that represent Torah when it's kavua, when it's set. And these 2 sentences are Torah when it's transient. And you can only get 2 sentences out of that. Right? It's not the same as the rest of the Torah. That's what it comes to represent. Now the Sfarno says in the beginning of the Sedra, and I want to connect this concept to the beginning of the Sedra too. Says the menorah had 7 branches, but really it only had 6 branches, because the menorah was the middle, and the branches branched out from the middle. So there were 3 branches to the right and 3 branches to the left. And the Torah says that the 3 branches to the right face the middle, the wicks. The 3 branches to the left face the middle. The wicks were made to face towards the center. And el mul penei ha-menorah, towards the center of the menorah, all 7 candles should illuminate. So the Sfarno asks, that's not true. What happened here is 6 of the candles illuminate towards the center. The center is the center. It doesn't illuminate on itself. So you're not having 7 candles illuminate to the center. You have 6 illuminating towards the center. Why does it say 7 should illuminate towards the center? So he says like this. The 3 branches to the right represent people who are devoted to Torah exclusively. Torah umnasim. People are sitting and learning full time. Rabbonim, Dayanim, people who are dedicated and devoted to Torah full time. The 3 branches to the left are people who include a worldly occupation with their Torah. They learn Torah, but they earn a worldly occupation. Those are people of Torah im derech eretz, Torah together with a worldly occupation. He said when the people on the right do their job, l'shem shamayim, and they learn Torah full time, but they do it l'shem shamayim. And the people on the left work and learn, and they do that l'shem shamayim. And they all face towards the middle, right, with the right intention. The middle represents God's light. So they all face the middle and have the right intentions, right, for the sake of heaven. They're doing their role. Then the light of God emanates from all of them. Then your Iru Shiva Saneros, the light of God comes from all of them. Okay. I like to add to that, not only when do they look to the middle, do they have the right intentions in what they're doing, right? They're doing it L'Shem Shamayim, but they look at each other. When each one can respect the other, the ones that are working respect the ones that are learning, and don't consider them parasites. And the ones that are learning can respect the people who are working, and don't consider them second-class citizens. Right, because everybody's doing their part properly, then the light of God comes from all of them. Now, a little bit difficult to understand this Sfarno, because the light of God, what's it called, is coming from the Torah, not from the idea that people are working and learning. It's not the working that the menorah represents. The menorah represents the idea of Torah. So why are the 3 branches to the left represented of people working and learning? Right, it seems that the working is also part of this light of God of the Torah. The truth is, it is that the Svarim say that somebody who works in the with the intention that I'm working in order to be able to learn. I'm working in order to be able to support people who are learning, right? So my working is a part and parcel of my learning and other people's learning. Then the work itself becomes part and parcel of the Torah, because it becomes a hechsher mitzvah, becomes the preparation for the mitzvah of learning Torah and observing Torah. How do you do it? Right? Whenever you prepare for a mitzvah, you build a sukkah. So even though the mitzvah of sukkah is dwelling in the sukkah, but building it is a necessity to be able to dwell in it. So when you're building the sukkah, you're involved in the mitzvah of dwelling in the sukkah, except at the preparatory stage. And that's a part of the mitzvah itself. So too, when a person's working for a living, but his intention is, I'm doing this in order to be able to live a Torah life and learn Torah, right? Then that is part of the preparation for the mitzvah. It's part of the mitzvah itself. It's part of the Torah itself. The Ksav Sofer says that's why tefillin, wearing tefillin, is like learning Torah. He says, what does it mean? The tefillin you put on your left hand, right, in order to leave your right hand open so you can work while you have the tefillin all day. That's the real thing. We don't do it, only wear it when we daven, because you really need to have your mind on the tefillin and keep it pure, and we're not on the level to do that. We're on the level to do it only when we're daven. But really, they used to wear tefillin all day. They used to eat with the tefillin on, basically. They used to work with the tefillin on. The only thing to do was go into the bathroom or sleep in them. Otherwise, all day they wore tefillin. So the tefillin represent the fact that when I'm working with my right hand, if my left hand is connected to God, connected to the idea that what I'm working is all for the sake of being able to keep mitzvahs and Torah, then it's like learning Torah. He says that's why we don't wear tefillin at night or on Shabbos and Yom Tov, because then you don't have to work. So then you can learn. Then you can't have the substitute. Then you have to actually learn. So you don't have tefillin then. Not at night and not Shabbos and Yom Tov. In any case, there's another thing from the Pele Yoetz. He has another sefer called Elef HaMogin, or Mogin HaElef. I never remember which one it is. It's one of the two. And he says like this. He says it on a pasuk, but he says like this. He says, if you want to be able to take your material possessions and make them something that are significant for the world to come, that you won't leave them here, you'll be able to take what you earned and spend time on earning a living in this world, and you'll be able to take it as a merit of the world to come, you need the following prescription. First thing is, you have to make sure you earn an honest living. Don't transgress any prohibitions in earning your living. It has to be a living that's righteous, not crooked. Second condition. During the day, you should devote yourself five times to spiritual things. Three times a day to daven, and two times to set up a chavrusa, learning, whatever, two times a day. Day and night. Third condition. While you're working, you should have in mind that you're doing it in order to be able to live a Torah life and to learn Torah. That's why you're earning the living, so you'll be able to have the wherewithal to live a Torah life and to learn. He says, if you keep that prescription, you earn an honest living, you set aside times where you're devoted totally to, what's it called, exclusively to spiritual things during the day, five times, and you, what's it called, you have in mind when you're working that you're doing it in order to be able to observe and learn Torah, then he says, we don't know who's on a higher level. A person who learns Torah all day, or a person who, what's it called, follows this prescription till we get to Olam Haba, we won't know. It's possible that a person who follows that prescription is on a higher level than somebody who learns all day, but doesn't do it L'Shem Shamayim. What does that mean, L'Shem Shamayim? How can you learn all day and not do it L'Shem Shamayim? So I'll tell you. It says that, the Rambam says, that anybody who thinks that he's going to devote himself to learning Torah and not earn a living and be supported from tzedakah is a terrible person who is mechalel shem shamayim. He desecrates God's name, he extinguishes the light of religion, and he loses his share in the world to come. That's pretty big condemning against all the kollelim, right? That's what people are doing. They're learning Torah and supported by tzedakah. Yet the same Rambam in another place says that anybody who devotes himself to Torah exclusively, just like the Levium, Shevet Levi, didn't go to war, and they didn't have a share in Eretz Israel, and they didn't support themselves, they were supported by the Jewish people. Anybody who wants to devote himself totally to Torah and Avodas Hashem, right, and separates himself from the mundane pursuits of this world, So he is holy of holies, and God will provide for him like he provided for the Leviim, meaning he'll command the Jewish people to support him. So here he says he's holy of holies. Here he says he's full of holes. Right? He's a terrible person. So they, one answer, I think, is what the Sfarno says in Pirkei Avos. He says, somebody who says the following, I need to earn a living. I could be a plumber, but I don't like water. I could be a doctor, I can't stand the sight of blood. I could be a businessman, I can't add and subtract. So, but I really love learning Torah, and I hear they pay for it, right? I'll get paid. So I'm going to make Torah my vocation. That's Chil Hashem. You're taking the Torah and using it as a means to earn a living. That's your motivation. That's not L'shem Shamayim, that's terrible. Then there's a person who says the following. I really feel that I could contribute to the Jewish people by dedicating myself totally to Torah. I feel I can do it. I feel I have the ability to do it and the desire to do it. And I want to make Torah my avocation. Okay? But there's a problem. Because if I do this, like for more than 3-4 days, I'll starve to death. So how in the world am I going to eat? How in the world am I going to be able to have a house to live in? I'm forced to be able to accept support from other people who want to support people who are learning Torah. So here, it depends which is the horse and which is the cart. Right? If my intention is to earn a living, and I'm using Torah as a means to earn a living, right, that's possible. If my intention is to devote myself to Torah, but I need to, what's it called, to be supported in order to be able to do that, that's Kodesh Kadoshim. Okay. So therefore, a person that, what's it called, that makes his Torah, okay, keva, makes it set. The Torah is the ikkar of my day, right? I'm working the other side of the menorah. I'm working because I want to be able to lead a Torah life. I'm not working for the sake of being able to have pleasures or whatever. That's not my intention. My intention is to earn a living so I can have a Torah life and learn Torah. So then that, because the Torah then, it says in Pirkei Avos, Asei Torah, so make the Torah the main settled thing of your life, and everything else is transient around that for its sake. Don't make your earning a living and your material life the main thing, and the Torah transient. Make the Torah the main thing and your other parts of your life transient that are all for the sake of that Torah. So that's the idea of Asei Torah Kva, of making the Torah a settled thing. That's what we said was the Mila of Har Sinai and the Mila of Eretz Yisrael, and what they were running away from. And the Chafetz Chaim says that somebody who's, what's it called, makes his earning a living all surrounding his Torah. In other words, the Torah, that's my life. And earning a living is to be able to have that life. Then the earning the living becomes part of the Torah itself, like we said. Right? Not only that, a person like that, what's it called, will become an ikar in Olam Haba. He'll have his Olam Haba also, just because he made the Torah in this world an ikar, he'll be an ikar in the world to come. And the Chassid Yavid says just the opposite. A person could keep Torah and learn Torah, but that's not the main thing in his life. That's a transient thing. The main thing is his physical material pleasures. Even if he gets Olam Haba and he gets a Gan Eden, he'll only be transient over there, not kavua. Mida keneged mida. As he lived in this world, the Torah wasn't the ikar, so in that world also he won't be an ikar, only be a secondary transient thing. And the Chassid Yavid says that what is this idea? Se toroscha kva, make your house a beis vad lechachamim. Make your house a makom Torah. Right? Don't just go to a beis medrash and learn. That's transient. That's where you are temporarily. But where you are kavua, make it a makom Torah. Asei toros chagva, make your home a makom kavua, which is exactly the point that we said about the end of the middle of the sedra, that running away from Har Sinai is running away from a makom kavua Torah is very important, much different than a transient makom Torah. And that's why it says that the early generations made their Torah the main thing in their life, and they're earning a living, a secondary thing, and both of them were Niskayim B'yodam, meaning both of them became part of their Torah. Both of them were eternal. Their work became, for the sake of their Torah, part of the Torah. So they got Olam Haba for both things. But later generations made their work the main thing, and the Torah was transient. So both of them didn't, their Torah wasn't the Torah it should be, and their work, it wasn't for the sake of Torah, so it had no lasting value. I was thinking, therefore, maybe that's why, what's it called, again, these two sentences represent Torah that's transient. And you can only get two sentences out of that. And this is considered when Torah is being burnt. You say burnt Torah, right? That's what you learn from these psukim. And it could be, therefore, the nuns have another meaning. It says, it's when a person comes to judgment in the future world, so the first thing he's judged on is how much Torah he learned. And then everything else after that. Yet another place the Gemara says, the first question they ask him is, did you deal in business honestly? So Tosa says, if you're judging him on Torah learning, what do you ask him about his business? So Tosa says, no, first you ask him about his business, then you ask him about the Torah, and you judge about the Torah first. But it doesn't make sense. If you're going to judge on the Torah first, ask him about the Torah first. Why ask him about the business? But what we said is that if you work with the right intention, then the time you're working can be counted like learning Torah, because it's all a preparation for learning Torah. So before we can decide if a person was koveya itim la Torah, how much time he set aside for Torah, we first have to ascertain under what conditions and with what intention he was working. And if you work be'emuna, nasata v'nasata be'emuna, you carried on your business deals with faith and honesty, and you did it because you need that, you wanted to be able to prepare for a Torah life, then the time that you work will be counted towards your Torah. So we can't judge you on Torah until we find out how you worked. Now the words nosata vinosata, if you take the Rosh Tevos, right, is nun vav nun. Nosata vinosata. So maybe these upside down nuns is that the person didn't make his whole Torah keva and everything surrounding that, but he made the other things in his life the main thing. So he distorted that nasata vinasata, the nun of did you carry on your business deals with emuna, meaning did you do it all for the sake of Torah and make the Torah the main thing and everything else revolved around that, or no? Your main thing was your gashmias and everything else revolved around that. Your Torah revolved around that. So that's why the nuns, the backward nuns, set off these two sentences, because they represent the fact that the person wasn't nosata vinosata bemuna. He didn't make the Torah the main thing and make his entire business and living and earning a living around that, but just the opposite. He turned around the tables. So that is a lesson for us that we should appreciate Mekomos Torah of Kavua, set places of Torah, because that gives us the incentive to want to make the Torah a set thing in our life, the set fulcrum of our life, and everything else revolves around that. And if we do that, then we'll be zocha that the time will come and the whole world will be like that, where the ikra of the world will be Torah. That's Yemos HaMashiach. How does the Navi describe Yemos HaMashiach? Umbala ha'aretz deyas Hashem kamayim liyam nechasim. The world will be filled with knowledge of God like the waters fill the sea. So the Tosef Rosh Hashiva of Edimir Bloch explained the following way. There's a lot of things in the ocean. There's fish, there's seaweed, there's shells, there's coral, there's a million things in the ocean. But when you look at the ocean, what do you see? Water. Same thing. There'll be a lot of things in the world. There are a lot of things in this world. But when you look at the world, you'll see Torah. You'll see Das Hashem. Right? All those other things are just part of the ocean. They're not things to themselves. That's the Mos HaMashiach. The whole world will be a makom kavua of Torah, where Torah will be the fulcrum, the main thing, and everything else will be subordinate to that. And that's how a person has to live in this world, where the Torah is the main thing. His kitzvias, what he's settled in, is Torah, and everything else is transient around that Torah.
Seems to me like the Levites were maybe 10% of the population. They were the ones that were learning, and everybody else was supporting them so they could learn. Coming from America, being a Bali Tshuva, it seemed in America that people were working and learning Torah. I come here, and there's a whole very big segment of the observant people where the community doesn't want them to go out and learn and work. The families don't want them to come out and learn and work. They want everybody to just...
Okay, the truth is that there's a difference between America and Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, right, there's all different parts of the of the Jewish people. Okay, in Gaulis it could be that the majority of people taka are working and learning, and the minority are devoted to full time to Torah. But Eretz Yisrael, at least in the ideal, right? Where in Eretz Yisrael it could be the opposite also. The Chassam Sofer says in Eretz Yisrael, working is a mitzvah too, because it's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So here, you can't even learn full time. You have to work as a mitzvah. You can't say, I don't put on a tefillin because I'm learning. But Lamaisa, that's when there's a Beis HaMikdash or whatever. But on the other hand, it could be that under circumstances, since Eretz Yisrael is so Kodesh, so the people who gravitate here from Klal Yisrael, which are still the minority of Jews in the world, especially the minority of Jews who understand what's going on, right? So here, the majority are devoted totally to Torah because it's Eretz Yisrael, right? It could be also that it's there is something to say about maybe it's not the way it should be, because somebody who's devoted to Torah, right, and is not working because he's learning, Mamela, he can't work because he's devoted to Torah full time. That's ideal, but unfortunately, under the circumstances, because of the peer pressure or whatever, there are people who are not necessarily learning, and because of that not working, but just became a stigma to work. So they're just not working. So it doesn't make a difference if they're learning or not, but the Icarus are not working. That's a distortion. People who are not working because they're learning is one thing. But somebody who's not working because it's a stigma in working, not because they're learning. And the Mela, they have no other choice, so they'll sit in the base medrash or whatever and even learn, but they're not doing it because they want to learn, they're doing it because it's a stigma to work. That's already a distortion.